Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on sea energy agriculture right after this. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. It's a foreign and alien ideology. Traditional American values are individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. These foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. We covet our neighbor's property, and then we call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve notes. The practice of idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods that we call government is all pervasive. And we're not getting away with these crimes either. We're now paying up to 75% of everything that we create and produce in taxes. We live in mortgaged homes owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars, but they're owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four has a $70,000 consumer debt hanging over his head. We owe $13 trillion in our national debt. We're surety for another $100 trillion of unfunded government obligations. And our financial institutions are leveraged out to more than $100 trillion worldwide. And our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme, and you and I live from paycheck to paycheck. And then we've been taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. It's the place to start. You can start by calling right now and asking for one. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Well, let's take a look at sea energy agriculture. Last time we were taking a look at the cause and effect relationship between disease and minerals, and why it is that we're so fat because we can't shut off our food requirements. We keep eating and eating and eating because the minerals that should be in the food that we're eating aren't there. And so the food, the demineralized, the devitalized food, never signals our stomach to shut off, and we keep flooding our bodies with more and more calories, and we're actually starving to death, but we're fat as pigs in the process. So why is that? And it's called planned food pollution. Our food is polluted and it's planned that way. That's so that you'll buy more of it and eat more of it. If you were to select 10 people at random and just ask them which industry they believe to be America's biggest industry, about half of them will say steel or autos. One or two might think of chemicals and plastics or pharmaceuticals. Or maybe one or two would vote for oil or communications such as American telephone and telegraph. But none of them would be correct. The food industry in America is by far and away the country's largest, and yet for all of its size, for all of its sales, retail outlets, the number of workers and business of manufacturing food isn't even a human enterprise. Green plants are the only producers of food on this planet. Human hands and minds, like Monsanto or ADM, are only capable of harvesting, packing, processing, and marketing the products which God alone knows how to manufacture. Gathering food has always been and always will be man's first order of business because it's basic to his survival. Food getting for the populace has evolved from a nomadic hunting and foraging existence to the modern supermarket with its astonishing assortments of cans and bottles and packages and cartons and bags and boxes and other packaging innovations. This myriad of containers holds an infinite variety of edibles brought in from all parts of the nation and indeed from all parts of the world. A natural result of these changes in the getting of food are the accompanying changes in food processing and preparation. What is recently, or as recently as a few years ago, took the average housewife up to 3 hours to prepare for a full course nutritional meal now requires only one-third of that amount of time thanks to prepackaging and instant cooking and prepared foods. Now, the advent of automation in the food industry leaves the propositions of hunting, fishing, and foraging to the sportsman and the hobbyist. In the processing plant, the food is received in whole, fully formed. It's in its natural condition rather than such elemental forms as carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, and the like. What the factory does is clean the food, remove some of it, refine it, synthetically fortify it, polish it, bleach it, paint it, dye it, spray it, dehydrate it, reconstitute it, preserve it, and perhaps package it for its final distribution to the retailer and then finally to you and your table. This practice of automated food processing affects the manufacture of food in the same fashion, so that just as power equipment has replaced beasts of burden and freed the farmer from the back-breaking tasks of tilling, cultivating, and harvesting, the mechanization process has expanded to include farm elevators, farm conveyors, augers, blowers, shuttles, and other contrivances. The modernized farm has become an engineering wonderland, and the mechanized developments have greatly increased the food handling capacity of the farmer. With this automation revolution comes a quest for increased production and greater yields, which justified the financial investment of large sums for mechanization in the first place. Now, in the process, we have lost sight of the fact that food is not manufactured by mechanical innovation. Food is manufactured by living creatures. It's a biological process. It is not an industrial process. The green plants and the animals which feed upon them are also biological. Now, there are natural biological laws of time, growth, and maturity, which, when they're interfered with, lead to serious consequences in the organism. So let's pause here for a moment. Let's think about this for a moment, because in Leviticus 19, verse 19, our Creator gave us a law that deals with this thing of manufacture or production of food. And it says, in short, that we're not to crossbreed our animals and we're not to sow our fields with mingled seed. Now, mingled seed deals with hybridization. And it's certainly true that if you take natural seed and you cross-pollinate it or crossbreed it, you can come up with what we call hybrids, and the hybrids will produce more bushels, more tons. But there's a trade-off when that happens. And the trade-off that we get is a lowered amount of nutrients in the product. I once had a guy come down here. He was a pig farmer up in Iowa, and he told of a story up there. He was feeding pigs, and one day, he went into the pig pen, and he noticed there was a couple of dead pigs in there. Well, that happens once in a while, so he took them out, and the next day, he noticed when he went in the pig pen, a couple more dead. And this went on every day, two or three dead pigs, and so he said, well, there's something wrong here. So they called in the vet, and the vet took the dead pigs and autopsied them, and they couldn't find anything wrong with them. They were fat and healthy, and they're just falling over dead, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. So they did some chemical analysis up at the University of Iowa, and when they came back, they said, hey, these pigs are dying from protein deficiency. They were dying from protein deficiency. Now, they had feed in front of them all the time. They had food right there. When you're feeding animals, see, like chickens, you know, they never run out of food. They have food in front of them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, the food that was being fed to them was a ConAgra ration of 6% protein. Now, they thought that it had 8%, but it only had 6. The pigs can't live on 6%. They can live on 8. Now, corn should have a 16% protein value. There isn't any corn in the United States that has 16% anymore, like our wheat. The wheat should have a 24% protein value, but it doesn't. It runs 7 to 13%, and that's because it's being grown on land that is nutritionally deficient. You cannot get out of the land and into the plant that which is not in the land to start with. If you've got land that doesn't have iodine in it, you can't get iodine into the plants. Now, that's what our dilemma is. We have overcropped our land to such a degree that the nutrients that should be in the soil aren't there. And because they're not there, then the corn plant has to grow without the benefit of those nutrients. Now, we can hybridize that seed, and then we can grow that seed on soil that's nutritionally deficient by putting in the major nutrients. That would be nitrogen, potash, and KP, what they call it, nitrogen, potash, and one other. And it'll grow. There's no doubt about that. But when you get through with it, when you use these hybridized seed in violation of Leviticus 19:19, when you try to force this land to produce abnormally, it works for a while. It actually produces greater and greater profits. But like mining coal out of a coal seam, there comes a point in time when the coal is gone. That's what miners do. They mine the seam until it's gone, and then they quit, and they have to go move on to some other seam. Now, a fellow by the name of Adolf Steinbrom of Fairbanks, Iowa, tested this some years back. And he put the matter in perspective by having samples of corn tested for the nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds. And when compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states, in a recent year, Steinbrom's open pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, and the same result has also been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, this is the results of the seed, not the land, just the seed. By planting open pollinated seed versus this hybridized seed, mingled seed, that we're told not to use, he got those kinds of results. Now, as the land gets poorer and poorer, we need more desperate measures, more desperate moves. So as the protein content goes down in the corn and the wheat and so on, we have to have higher and higher protein content in the feed. So some fellow back during World War II, he woke up one day and he says, well, why don't we just take the offal from our packing plants? Offal. That's the guts and the hide and hair and all of the protein that we throw away, the bones and so on. Let's grind all that up, cook it real good, and then dry it and stick it into the cattle feed. And they did. And then over time they discovered that this causes mad cow disease. See, these ruminants, they're not designed by God. They were designed by God, but they weren't designed to eat meat. They're vegetarians, they're ruminants. And so when you feed them this ration with this meat bypass protein in it, it causes disease. Now, it's a real good idea, and it works, and I don't deny it. You know, you can boost the protein content. I've tested it. If you feed range cubes to dairy cows, they will produce about a third more milk. But in the process, it will kill the cow. So there's a trade-off here. You know, you don't get something for nothing. And so over time now, we've awakened to the fact that mad cow disease is pretty serious, but it doesn't change anything in the universities. It doesn't change anything in the major manufacturing corporations like Monsanto or Standard Oil or OrthoGrow. I mean, those people have industrial agendas. They have industrial products that they're selling to and selling for and a biological process. And it has short-term, short-range benefits to it and profits. But the ultimate end of it is the equivalent of the man who killed the goose that laid the golden egg. So you remember the story, the goose is laying a golden egg every day, and the guy says, well, gosh, let me kill the goose and take all the golden eggs out of him. So he did. He killed the goose, opened it up, and he got three golden eggs. But now, after the goose is dead, he doesn't get any more golden eggs. Now, agriculture works like that. You know, if you work within the bounds of the agricultural process, the biological process, you get so much out of it. And if you stick with it, it'll last that way forever. You could practice land Sabbaths and jubilees on a piece of ground and let it rest once every 7 years and every 50 years, and you could farm that piece of ground forever. And you would never degenerate its productive capacity. It would never run out of nutrients. It would always regenerate its nutrients. Or you can farm it for a number of years, one after the other, and don't practice any land Sabbaths, don't practice any jubilees, and at some point in time, the land will wear out, and then you have nothing. A couple of examples of that. There was a story up in Washington State. And they were growing apples up there, and boy, these apples were really good, and they did it for many, many years, 20, 30 years. They never fertilized. They never did anything. And finally, after about 30 years, they noticed that there was more and more worms getting into the apples. And so they figured, well, we got to do something to kill these worms, and so they did. They put an arsenic spray on, and it worked like a shot. And they would spray the apples with this arsenic spray, and it would kill the worms, and they kept farming for another 30 years. And so 60 years went by, but they noticed that the crops were getting smaller and smaller. And finally, the trees started dying. And they didn't know what was causing the death of the trees, but they kept after it until finally it became totally uneconomical to grow apples and to spray them with this arsenic spray and to sell the small size apples, and so they quit. It became economically unfeasible to grow apples there. Now today, the land where these apples were growing near Wenatchee is sterile. The arsenic in the soil has so poisoned and polluted the soil that nothing will grow there now. Can't grow apple trees at all. It's another story of killing the goose that lays the golden egg. It sounded like a good idea at the time. But again, it was an unnatural return. They were looking at short-term gain. Now, for 60 years, it worked. And then now, over the past 100 years, there's nothing. Zero. Now, it used to be we practiced slash and burn agriculture. And what we would do is we'd come into a forested area, slash it, cut it down, burn it, and start growing crops there. And it lasts for about 30 to 60 years. But ultimately, by cropping it every year, it consumes the nutrients out of the soil until it gets to a point where the plants are nutrient starved, and then insect pests come in. And the insect pests, in the beginning, you know, they eat some of the plants, and as time goes on, they eat more and more of the plants until finally it becomes economically unfeasible to grow on this ground. So it would be abandoned. They'd go out and find another piece of forest, and they'd cut it down, chop it up, and then plant and use that for 30 to 60 years, and this just went on and on. Now, after you abandoned a piece of ground, it was discovered after it had just laid there and brush grew up and trees grew on it, and after, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, you could come back and slash and burn that ground again. Now, if we were paying attention to our Creator, we never had to abandon the land to start with and then come back and slash and burn it again. If we would practice the land Sabbath, which is 1 year out of seven, 1/7 is what you're going to dedicate to fertilization. And if you would do that, you could farm on that piece of ground forever. But, you know, we're greedy pigs, and so we farm 7, 14, 21, 28, 35, 42, 49 years. And then after, 50, 60 years, in some cases, it takes a little longer, but we can wear the land out. And we do, and we have. Now, in modern times, we've got higher and higher population growth, and so now we needed another solution. And so the manufacturing companies that came out of Germany, the petrochemical industry in Germany, about World War I, discovered nitrogen fertilizer, chemical nitrogen fertilizer. And so they put this chemical fertilizer together, and that tided us over, that with pesticides, for another 100 years. You know, just about 100 years. And now we've got a new process here called MGOs now. And so now we're not MGOs, it's GMOs, genetically modified organisms. And we're now trying to stretch this unnatural process out a little bit further and take a little more unnatural profit. See if we can't stretch this goose out a little bit further and get one or two more eggs out of it. The ultimate end to this, though, is that it's unsustainable because it's a biological process that we're trying to apply a physical manufacturing process to. It hasn't worked in the past, isn't working now, it isn't likely to work in the future, but we're not going to stop. Now, there's going to be a consequence that comes from that. To avoid that consequence, Dr. Murray, who wrote the book Sea Energy and Agriculture, said, look, we can sidestep, we can correct our mistakes. We need to go to the ocean, we need to take the sea solids out of it and refertilize our land with these trace elements. It's more work, it's going to cost us more time, effort, and energy. We're going to have to work harder to correct our mistake, but if we got after it, we could probably ameliorate that error. We're not going to do that. Men are not designed or equipped for that. As an example, over here in the Oglala Aquifer, it's running out of water. They estimate another 20 years and it'll be dry. The governor of Kansas suggested that we stop any further drilling, and the farmers of Kansas just come unhinged, and they said, absolutely no way. So we're still drilling wells over there just fast as we can stick them in the ground. Everybody that's associated with the aquifer knows that 50% of the food in America is produced out of that aquifer, which covers 8 states, and that it's going dry, and that it's got about 20 years left, and we ought to take action, but we're not going to. And that's because there are interests. There are very important commercial and financial interests that are involved there, like banks that loan money to those farmers and have mortgages on those farms, and they're not gonna sit still for long-term development. We're gonna develop it right now. We're gonna take every dollar out of it. We're gonna mine it. So they're mining the aquifer, mining the land. And even though there is a proven solution that we could adopt, which is why I'm on the air, for the few of us out here that want to survive this calamity, there's a solution to the problem, and the solution has to be we got to put those nutrients back in our soil. Now, if we don't, then we're going to die from the malnutrition, and if we do, we could probably live a little longer. All of us could do it, but only a few of us are going to. So that's why I suggested that you subscribe now to the Acres USA newsletter, their magazine. Let me give you their name and number here. It's called Acres USA. And when we talk about biological processes, this is the source. This is the mother lode of biological farming. Acres USA, 1-800-355-5513. I think it's $30 or $35 a year here in the States. Probably a few bucks higher if you're in Canada or Australia. Acres USA, 1-800-355-5513. Now they're online at www.acresusa.com. That's all one word, acresusa.com. Now, there's a company here that actually makes these minerals. They go down to the ocean, and they take out the water, and then they evaporate the water, and then they sort out the minerals from the sodium chloride, and then they bag it up, and they ship it to you. And that's what we need. That's what we need for our gardens. That's what we need for our survival. That's why I'm telling you about it. And it's called C90, 100 mineral, C mineral solids. For more information, visit www.seaagri.com. That's SEA. agri.com, or you can call them direct at 770 770-360-7003. Once more, that's 770-360-7003. Now, I don't know what the prices are. You'll have to call and check and find out. And can you get the material, put it in bags, bring it home, stick it in your garage or barn, and then you'll have a supply of it to keep fertilizing your own garden so that you'll have the nutrients that you need to maintain your own health. Now, in the words of Dr. William Albrecht, one of our nation's leading soil scientists, we have succumbed to the idea that agriculture can be made an industrial procedure. Now, the truth is, it is a biological procedure. Biological. And biological meddling by man in the production of food leads to cellular and structural changes in the tampered with plant. Now, that's what we're doing here with this GMO technology. And we don't know how it's going to come out, but in the past, every time we've tried this, it's always failed. So now we're engaged in this humongous experiment. And I've reported on GMOs in the past, but I just thought I'd throw that out there in this program dealing with sea energy agriculture. I think that it's going to backfire on us again, and it's going to have tremendous consequences, biblical-sized consequences, as we see in Revelation chapter 6. Now, continued forced feedings of a few chemicals and high-concentration fertilizers upsets the balance of soil nutrition. And after a period of years, the natural balance of all of the elements in the soils becomes so skewed, so markedly out of balance, that abundantly supplied elements tend to block the availability of less abundant elements. In this addiction to the maintenance of high yields, the farmer has resorted to an ever-increasing number of insecticides, fungicides, pesticides, weed killers, and countless other chemical contaminants and compounds, which are dispensed in a variety of ways. Now, some of these chemicals are powerful poisons, and they have been used so extensively that traces of them are turning up in most of our grains, fruits, and vegetables. And what that ends up doing is poisoning us. So you have a higher and higher proportion of our population that are now allergic to. They have allergies. And they can't eat this, that, and another thing. Their metabolism, their body metabolism is so screwed up. Now, I'm not sure that they can straighten that out with sea minerals, but it sure as hell couldn't help, or couldn't hurt, now could it? If we went back to natural foods and we got the nutritional values back into those foods, I find it hard to believe that that's going to cause you any distress. Now, many of these are cumulative, that's these toxins, in animal tissue, so that animals and humans who consume the treated crops begin depositing the poisons in their body cells for an overall effect of slow, relentless, deliberate poisoning. Human tolerance levels for many of these poisons have not yet been fully calculated, but eminent scientists and chemists, researchers, have concluded that the cumulative tendency necessitates the establishment of zero tolerance levels in many foods. No amount is safe. And yet the spraying continues, and the practice takes on a hideous aspect when you realize that some of the poisons that are used for crop spraying are also used in chemical warfare. Americans tend to feel secure simply because the deplorable practice is widespread, and therefore it's normal because everybody does it. Perhaps the most alarming aspect is the fact that these sprays not only lie on the outer coverings of the crops, but they penetrate, and they are assimilated into the edible portions of the plants through their roots, so that washing, peeling, and cooking cannot entirely remove the poisons. So let me put a little mark here, and let's take a look at washing and peeling and cooking cannot entirely remove the poisons. You see, peeling a plant, peeling a fruit, takes away a lot of its nutrients, because the truth of the matter is most of the nutrients in a potato are in the potato peeling. And cooking that potato and boiling it, when you pour the water off, you pour off the nutrients with the water. And then you eat the carbohydrates, that's the white part of the potato, so you're starving yourself. If we ate a carrot and we didn't peel it, and we just ate the skin right along with it, we would get probably half again as much in the way of nutrients. But we need to wash it, we need to peel it, and we need to cook it so that we can get rid of the toxins that we're growing it with. That's another one of those unsustainable side effects that's coming back to bite us all. So it would be better if we fertilized our fields and then we didn't use these sprays and chemicals, because if the plants have all of the nutrients that they need, the insects won't eat them. In the same way that a healthy toad cannot be given cancer, a healthy plant cannot be given a disease either. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about sea energy agriculture. It's a phenomenon. It's been right here under our noses from day one. A fellow by the name of Maynard Murray discovered it back in the 1930s. It's so simple that it's almost embarrassing. If you take a look at the one location where all of the minerals that we need in our plants is located, it's in seawater, equally distributed around the world. Now, this seawater can be evaporated, and it has been for hundreds of years, thousands of years. And the resultant salt that comes out of it is sodium chloride, along with the sea minerals, has been available, and it's called sea salt, Celtic sea salt. And it's pretty pricey stuff. It sells for $22 a pound in the health food store. I mean, you're not going to find it now in the supermarket. You can forget that. You can buy sodium chloride salt in the supermarket. That's the ordinary run-of-the-mill salt. If you want the natural salt, it has to be evaporated, and then it's wet. And that's another thing that you people are going to be shocked about. This natural sea salt's wet, and it's in coarse grind, and you're not going to like it at all. I can tell you that right now. That was my first reaction when I saw it. And then when I did some more research on it, I found out that it contains all these natural minerals. Now, that's good, but as I showed you in the last program, we, that's you and I, animals, we cannot assimilate these inorganic salts, these inorganic minerals. But if we put them on the ground, the plants can, and then we can eat the plants, and then we can get our minerals, and that's the way it has to be done. So the Acres people took Murray's work, took his book, and they republished it. This thing has been dead and out of print for, hell, 40 years, 50 years. And so the bottom line is that now it's been revived. I picked up on it. I had a guy show me the book, and he said, why don't you read this and see what you think? And I did, and I was absolutely shocked. So I called it a 1 in 100. 1 in 100. Now, it was first copyrighted in 1976, Valentine and Hendren Incorporated. It's been copyrighted again by Acres USA, 2003. And his research started in 1932, and I think he died in 1983. I think he had most of this published back in the 1950s. And then this Valentine picked it up, and then Acres USA picked it up. And it isn't going anywhere. I mean, if you think that OrthoGrow or Monsanto is going to pick up on this, you can rest assured that is never going to happen. So if you as an individual are sitting there saying, you know, I'd like to revitalize my soil, you can do this on a commercial scale. I mean, you can do this by the hundreds and thousands of acres. It's commercially and agriculturally sustainable, and it's economically feasible. So I told you about the company that does that. I'll give you their phone number again. It's this Agra, seagra.com, seagri.com. They're not the only company here advertising in the magazine either. There's others. I just picked them out at random. They're on page 36. So that's seagri.com, or you can call them direct at 770-361-7003. And see what you can do there. Meanwhile, don't forget to subscribe to the Acres publication, because in addition to this, there's another 100 companies in there that have information on organic growing, organic seeds, open pollinated seeds, antique seeds, and so on, and that you'll need for subsistence and survival. One of the most flagrant misuses of sprays has been with the chlorinated hydrocarbon group of insecticides. The most prominent of this group is called DDT, originally compounded back in 1874, and then given a rebirth during World War II to combat an increased incidence of typhus through mosquito control. Well, since 1945, it's been used extensively here in the United States agriculture until it was banned in June of 1972 by the Environmental Protection Agency. But in spite of efforts by environmentalists and concerned citizen groups, a drive is on to reinstate the license to distribute DDT in the United States by farmers, a group of scientists, and others. The magnitude of the effect of DDT and the effect that DDT can have on animals is illustrated by a story which was told by Leonard Wickenden, author of gardening and soil management books. To combat a spruce budworm infestation of 3 million acres of land up in Park County, Montana, DDT was sprayed as a pesticide. And in Mr. Wickenden's words, apparently the authorities who organized the broadcasting of this immense quantity of poison over almost 500 square miles of forests were blind to everything but the armies of spruce budworms. One can only assume that they formed a mental picture of the DDT making straight for the stomachs of the budworms, considerately avoiding all other insects, bird, and animal life in the forest. But what happened was disastrously different. And Mr. Wickenden concludes by quoting a Montana newspaper which tells of the mass destruction of all insect life, both good and bad, and the destruction of the aquatic life in the area. The fish died after eating the poisoned insects, or from the lack of food because of the reduction of the insect population. And then he goes on to raise the question about the effects of the number of birds which may also have died after feeding on the poisoned insects. Now, perhaps the main point in the fact that despite the apparent saturation of crops with insecticides, insects on plants still abound. And this is because predator insects are also killed, while at the same time mutated pest strains survive because of resistance to certain pesticides. Now, while less than 1% of insect species are considered pests, the other 99%, including bees, wasps, and butterflies, constituting the plant pollinating species, are also wiped out. These innocent bystanders serve as aerators of the soil, predators of insects, and scavengers of animal and plant waste, and yet they too are killed at random by these insecticides. So the farmer, when he sees a worm on his apple, he doesn't say to himself, "Why is that worm on that apple?" He sees the worm on the apple, eating his apple, and he says, "I need to kill the worm." He goes to the agricultural extension agent, and he says, "What you need is a toxic spray." He goes to his farm supply store, and they say, "What you need is DDT." He goes out and sprays DDT. It kills the worm on his apple. He sells the apple. He makes his money. He pays for the sprays. He has a little profit left over. He's happy as a clam at high tide. He doesn't sit there and say, "Gee, not only did I kill the worm on that apple, I killed every other insect, including the pollinating bees, wasps, and butterflies at the same time." And then he says, "Well, what I'll do is I'll pay the beekeeper to come in here with his bees early in the year and pollinate my crop." Well, wouldn't it be more logical for us if we were to get in harmony with the natural balance? You know, if we could get in harmony with the natural balance, we wouldn't have to pay the beekeeper to put his bees in. And we wouldn't have to pay the farm supply store for the poison to kill the worms on the apples. We wouldn't have to pay OrthoGrow for the chemical fertilizers to fertilize the trees. We could do the whole thing naturally and organically without poisoning ourselves in the process. Then we could eat the skin on the potatoes, the skin on the carrots. We'd get more nutrients, and nutrients then would keep us from getting cancer, heart attack, and stroke. Then we wouldn't need to buy health insurance or life insurance, which would put more dollars in our pocket to spend on a carnival cruise or a trip to Disney World or a new car or something else. Has anybody ever thought about that? Now, there's one more little factoid here that we probably ought to keep in mind, and that is that down here in the Gulf of Mexico, there's a dead zone. It's about 40 cubic miles of ocean. It's not just square miles, it's cubic. It has killed everything from the top of the water down to the ocean floor. Off the mouth of the Mississippi River, they call it a dead zone. Fish can't live there. There's no oxygen in the water. And it's caused by all of these chemicals and pesticides, mainly the fertilizer, chemical fertilizer, that drains off the fields into the creeks, down the rivers and into the ocean, Gulf of Mexico, which causes a great loss of sea life. Now, we're down here talking about all this oil that's causing such a big problem. And remember, the BP people, they went out there and they sprayed, I think it was 1 million gallons of some kind of chemical to disperse the oil. And they did. It dissolved the oil in the water, kind of like detergent does in your dishpan. And so now the oil is still there. It's just that it's in solution now in the water so that the fish now can run all of that polluted dishwater through their gills, absorb those toxins and chemicals out of the oil into their flesh so that you can eat it. Now, do you think that that's going to be good for you? Frankly, I don't think I want to eat any more fish coming out of the Gulf of Mexico. Not for a long while yet. Now, that's just one side effect, not to mention all the fish that it's going to kill and turtles and porpoises and all the rest of the animals down there that it's going to kill. But like this spruce worm down here, it seemed like the logical thing to do. We got oil in the water. We need to disperse it, and so let's throw this chemical on there. I don't think anybody thought ahead and said, gee, what's this chemical going to do? You know, we got one emergency over here. Let's not think about the consequences of our actions here. Yeah, it's been that way for 100 years or more, and I'm not here to tell you that anything's going to change. But for a few of us, you know, just you and me, you know, the bottom feeders out here, perhaps you and I should start thinking about what are we going to do about this? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put sea salts on my ground. I'm going to see if I can't get some, stick it in my barn, and see if I can alleviate this nutritional deficiency. Now, Sir Albert Howard of Oxford University has offered his point of view that insects and fungi are not the real cause of plant diseases, but only attack unsuitable varieties and mutations of crops, pointing out that the crops that are improperly nourished, and so keeping our agriculture up to the mark. In other words, pests must be looked to as an integral portion of any rational system of farming. The policy of protecting crops from pests by means of sprays, powders, and chemicals is unscientific and it's unsound, as even when successful, such procedures merely preserve the unfit and the obscure the real problem, how to grow healthy crops. So let's think about that for a second. In the natural process of life, God, the creator over here, has put corn borers out here. And these corn borers eat corn, but they only eat corn that is nutritionally deficient. Listen to that again. These agricultural pests, they don't eat all of the corn in the field. They only eat the unfit, unhealthy, sick plants. When you see a worm eating an apple, what that's telling you is that this apple is nutritionally deficient, and it ought not to be eaten by man, and that's why the worm is eating it. There's nothing more disgusting than to pick up an apple and see the wormholes in it. And then it gets even more disgusting when you bite into the apple and find half a worm. Come on, let's wake up, smell the coffee. When you see a worm on an apple or in an apple, you throw it away because that apple is nutritionally deficient. If you eat that apple, you will be eating foodless food. That's why you ought to be thinking about eating at McDonald's. That is foodless food. Furthermore, it's got a lot of toxins like fat in the hamburger. So if you think about agriculture as a biological process, these pests, as we call them, really are a part and parcel with the biological process. We need them. So when I see pests on my plants, and I look at that and I say, you know, this plant's sick. This plant needs food. And if I'll feed this plant, the plant will become strong, and then the pests won't attack it because it tastes bad. Plants that have all of their nutrients taste bad to insects. They won't eat them. Now, all of these plants have natural pests, natural balances. All of nature is in balance. Out in the West, there was a plant called the Klamath weed. And somehow or another, I think it came from Australia, got started up in Humboldt County, California, and this is right after World War II. And so they couldn't figure out, well, what are we going to do about this Klamath weed? So they started spraying it, and they started pulling it, and they were pulling their hair out. They couldn't figure out what to do, and this thing just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And pretty soon, some guy said, where does this plant come from? It comes from Australia. So they went down to Australia, took a look around, and they found that down there with the Klamath weed, it had a natural enemy. There was a thing called a beetle. They called it the Klamath weed beetle. Now, they don't call it that down in Australia. They probably have some other name for it, but it was discovered up in Klamath, California. So they brought those beetles back to California, and they turned them loose out there on the Klamath weed. In about 10 years, all the Klamath weed was back under control. There's Klamath weed there, and there's Klamath weed beetles there. And as the Klamath weed beetles were beating back the Klamath weed, people said, oh, my God, they're going to eat the redwood trees. No, they don't. Klamath weed beetles do not eat redwood trees. They eat Klamath weed, and that's it. Corn borers eat corn. And so there's a natural balance here, and if you pay attention to the natural balance, you can keep it in balance. But when you get things out of balance, then it becomes a real pain. Now, if you'll take a look at where these plants and animals came from, What keeps them in balance in Indonesia? What keeps them in balance in China, where they came from? You think about that, and pretty soon you'll be able to keep it in balance in California or wherever else you might have moved or removed these plants and animals to. Tuck that one away in your heart. Now, to determine the effects of DDT on humans, we consult the work of W. Coda Martin, MD, former president of the American Academy of Nutrition. Choosing patients who gave no history of occupational contact with insecticides, Dr. Martin analyzed the fat tissue of 25 human subjects for 25 DDT contents. And evidence of the DDT was found in 23 out of the 25 subjects in amounts ranging from 1 part per million to 11 parts per million, with the average of 3.5. In 7 of the subjects, 28%, the amount of DDT was over 5 parts per million, which is extremely important to Dr. Martin, since in animal tests, 5 parts per million will cause liver damage and is considered toxic. Dr. Martin's findings have been substantiated by other investigators who also found similar or slightly higher levels. Here's something for you to keep in mind. While DDT has been banned here in the United States, it's not banned in China. It's not banned in Mexico. It's not banned in other places in the world where we import our food from those places. So we're being poisoned by the poisons that come from the countries that are still using DDT. How do you like that? So you thought that your food was safe from DDT, but it's imported from China where they use it. So let's tuck that one away in our hearts and start asking some hard questions. Are you really sure that we want to buy this food from the supermarket, or should we be thinking about growing our own? I know it's a wild new concept over here, but maybe between GMOs and DDT, growing our own might be the solution to our own subsistence and survival. Hey, I'm about out of time here, boys and girls. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.